Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 72, section 3, which is old single column, page 811. Okay, this most interesting paper, this most exceptional information for any planet to receive, some details about the doings on another world, at least in part, government on a neighboring planet. We got through the first couple sections that laid out the basic geography and the racial nature and a little bit of the history of the people involved, and then in section two they gave us an overview of the three branches of government, executive, legislative, judicial, that exist on that island continent that much more advanced relative to the rest of the world, that nation. And now we're ready to get what you'll see right away when we start reading is very much recognized by those people as the foundation of not only the government of their state, but everything, all the institutions of their state, of their people, of those people. And it's an issue that is very much emphasized in other parts of the Revelation, as a general fact, a fact that we all have to very definitively reconsecrate ourselves to, reestablish a recognition of the foundational nature of the home, of the family, of marriage, to have any sort of civilization of any quality and of any endurance. So that most generalized truth that the Revelation brings out in many places, see, is clearly recognized by these people. They know that. And again, like we saw as we got into the paper last week, their knowing that is probably a combination of two things. One, just the general quality of their philosophic minds, recognizing that which is self-evident. And probably, unlike the rest of their world, a group of people holding on to some of the teachings from their prince and his staff and their Adam and Eve. Things may not have gotten so forgotten in that world as they have been on ours. So let's see what they get into. We'll find that there's just endless things to challenge some reflection about the current state on this world.
Number 3, the home life. On this continent, it is against the law for two families to live under the same roof. And since group dwellings have been outlawed, most of the tenement type of buildings have been demolished. But the unmarried still live in clubs, hotels, and other group dwellings. The smallest home site permitted must provide 50,000 square feet of land. All land and other property used for home purposes are free from taxation up to 10 times the minimum home site allotment.
Okay, just one paragraph. Look at all this stuff there. Okay, so start with that first sentence. Look at how definitive this is, right? I mean, they don't even allow duplexes, right? When, you can't have two, married couples, living side by side in a duplex,
Unless the roof is separated.
Then it's not a duplex. Right? And of course, it's got to be a little bit more than just, yeah, because as they point out, the smallest home site, right, is a little bit more than an acre. Okay? And just the fact that, you know, that they are demanding that the smallest home site, you know, is a little more than an acre in size, would they allow the two homes of the adjoining sites to be built, you know, right against each other on the property line? No, they, you know, they wouldn't be doing that, right? The whole point is to for everyone to have, you know, a definitive domain to establish an independence and an integrity as a family unit. So just very interesting to see that they, that this is a recent, you know, it's all part of this very recent clarification of their consciousness that they went through. They recognized that at the core of all their problems was just a corruption of the integrity of the foundation of everything, the home, the family, marriage.
So they tore
out
all the tenements.
Right. And, you know, so they're making a very strong effort to bound corrupting influence away from it and unnecessary complicating influences. You know, even notice there's no property taxes, right, even. All land and other property, you know, so not, you know, sort of personal property taxes or something like that, you know, besides, you know, the land itself. So you're free from taxation. Well, okay, a limit. Okay, if it gets up to be 10 times the minimum, okay, then they're going to charge some tax.
500,000 square feet.
Right, you know, 11 acres, you know, say, right? You know, just, you know, so the very first paragraph just very much makes the point of how firmly they're trying to establish this, how clearly they recognized that if you don't have sort of everything set up to make this happen, you know, you can't have, you know, property taxes sucking the economic life out of families and stuff. I mean, they need to be given the freedom to flower. And so they're given all of this assistance by the Mori system and by the laws to do just that. But obviously, when it's unmarried, okay, there can be group dwellings. And after all, that's one way you foster eventually people getting married. Get them to be close to one another. Get to know each other, right? So, you know, you can just see how they've eliminated all of the, you know, all the sloshing around in gray area. They recognize the importance of this. Okay, so just make it definitive, and sort of do what's reasonable by fiat, rather than letting that slowly, you know, sort of slosh out experientially, learn by leaping over long spans of time, where eventually, you know, after hundreds and hundreds of years, they go, you know, maybe we ought to, you know. Right, but they learn by looking. They recognize it up front, instituted, period, end of story. It's against the law for two families to live under the same roof, period.
You live and you have property around you. You're saying how this establishes different higher thoughts or
it gives you the freedom to breathe and to
peace.
Blossom, to develop.
There's
right.
A peace out right. In that, or right. There can be. I guess it could be, I don't know, different, but
yeah, and just, I mean,
you
and just
have more reflective time
yeah, right.
And ability.
See, exactly. See, they're trying to foster a reflective environment, and you know, it starts with the literal physical environment because they're just as much material, you know, minded creatures as we are. Right? So it starts with that material environment. And just, you know, pause for a second. What does a city look like? Oh my goodness! Think of how that one little paragraph just completely transformed what you were probably visualizing one of their cities looked like. There's no rows of houses, you know, in suburbia land, and there certainly isn't downtown, you know, massive apartment, you know, dilapidated apartment blocks or whatnot, you know, with families crammed in them. There's none of that. Right? So, I mean, think about how much land it takes to get to a city of 1 million people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up to about from 7 to 10 miles square, somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah, see?
Well, you can do the math. They can't tell you how many people, how many kids they have and stuff like that. So it's not as many as you think. Where I grew up, you know, it was 2-acre minimums.
Yeah.
It's a lot of places have those kinds of cover, whatever they call it.
Right. And the only place we see that sort of stuff is in sort of very high-end neighborhoods and things, you know. Yeah. Almost exurb sort of neighborhoods, yeah.
They may have taller buildings for people to work in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But not necessarily. Yeah.
Right, and they may be, you know, some of these group dwellings might be, you know, rather significant, right? I mean, but just nonetheless, it's just, you know, you can see that... you know, it's just rather striking to just think about how, you know, how much they sort of "quote unquote" laid down the law about that when they started this effort to restructure their society.
Yeah, just in contrast, what's taking place today here in America is homes are being built. So large homes on relatively small.
Yeah, areas. Bigger and bigger homes on smaller and smaller lots. Yes.
Well, I really noticed this because I took care of landscapes.
Right.
The ideal in these new home sites is a minimal amount of external property to maintain.
Yeah. Right.
It's all in the house.
Yeah, yeah, and so yeah, maybe we don't want to dwell forever, but just that's a good transition thought. You know, you think about how much maintenance there is when you know your minimum is an acre like that, and you'll see that as we go forward. The demands put upon all these people, you know, their social duty is, you know, huge. You know, the more you read, the more you feel like a lazy, good-for-nothing bum. I mean, the amount of responsibility that they assume in so many ways, and it's tested, and you know, I mean, and there's lots of peer pressure. So it's a very aggressive society. I mean, they've taken what obviously in the past was a very aggressive nature that was, you know, was focused on killing one another, you know, and redirected it, you know, into something productive instead of destructive. Okay.
The home life of this people has greatly improved during the last century. Attendance of parents, both fathers and mothers, at the parental schools of child culture is compulsory. Even the agriculturists who reside in small country settlements carry on this work by correspondence, going to the nearby centers for oral instruction once in 10 days every 2 weeks. For they maintain a 5-day week.
Okay, so maybe just notice a little. The author saw an opportunity to throw in a little detail there. You know, as we'll see, you know, they obviously have a day. I mean, their planet rotates once on its axis, you know, and that's their day. They go around their sun. They have a year, but they also have broken things up into months and weeks. Okay. And you see how here or there it feels like it's maybe coincidentally, there's some reason that it ends up being five, you know, like with ours, because, you know, they used a 28-day, you know, lunar cycle, a 28-day month way back in Dalmatia times. You could divide 28 by 4 and get 7, you know, and that's how we got the 7-day week. You know, maybe there's something like that here, but, you know, it is kind of interesting that it's, you know, half of 10, and they obviously we've already seen how much they love base, you know, putting things together in base 10. So they do have a week. It's kind of in the ballpark of our week. Okay, but now back to the details here. We're reminded that this is relatively new. And especially as we go further into the paper, we can wonder what things have happened since this was written, you know, now, you know, in the, over the last 100 years or so. A lot of things could have changed. But nonetheless, you know, they've got this in place, and again you see this compulsory. Right? That they've eliminated all the gray, you know, suggesting and maybe over time it'll improve. No, it's just boom. It's compulsory, no exceptions. Both fathers and mothers, you know. It's like, well, what about me way out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, as a farmer? You got to do it too. you know, and you're going to have to travel into town every 2 weeks, you know, et cetera. So,
they probably don't have online courses there yet.
Well, I mean, by now, they probably do have. See, that's go ahead, just, you know, a moment there. I mean, as we read forward, you can say, you know, they're pretty close to where we are in some of these technological things. So probably by now, they have an internet and that sort of stuff like we do. You know, and you can do these, a lot of these things maybe are a lot easier than they used to be. But nonetheless, you know, just the thing that might strike you is whenever they say, you know, it's against the law, it is compulsory. We have a lot of resistance to that. You're not the boss of me, you know, is kind of our bumper sticker. So, you know, at least on this world, the effects of the rebellion, you know, and that sort of anything goes mentality of false liberty is being very definitively said, no, this is the way it is, and there's no options. And our way or the highway. You know, and literally, they'll just, you know, ship you off the continent. You know, or if you're really problematic, they'll just escort you to the happy hunting ground, right? so they're very definitive about these things. Okay, what else we have here?
The average number of children in each family is 5, and they are under the full control of their parents, or, in case of the demise of one or both, under that of the guardians designated by the parental courts. It is considered a great honor for any family to be awarded the guardianship of a full orphan. Competitive examinations are held among parents, and the orphan is awarded to the home of those displaying the best parental qualifications.
Okay, so again, a whole bunch of things there. They are, they're very definitively, see, they recognize that you can't let things get into the mode that we've tended to slip into where, you know, you have 2 kids, and so the husband and wife are just replaced by 2 kids, and the population stays the same. You know, they've got a growing population because they want to have an ever, you know, the potential for an ever-expanding economy. You know, so they're not in decay in, you know, in terms of just their demographics, right?
Their most recent prophecy name was Joseph Smith, wasn't it?
Everyone's a joker. Right, see, you know, so, I mean, it's not just, you know, the farmers, right, having lots of kids or something like that. I mean, that's just the average number, right, is 5.
So long that was the case here too.
Right, right. Yep. But again, so you have to, you know, appreciate why they're saying these things, right? I mean, they're not just telling you that because, well, that was the number back then, and, you know, and it's probably dropped, you know, there now too, just like here. I mean, again, the point is not to give us facts about another planet that are immediately outdated. That's a waste of space in a revelation, right? They're trying to give you this picture so that you can reflect on this. You know that they're thinking about population issues. They're not committing social suicide by thinking, well, we got to make sure we don't overpopulate so no one have any kids, right? I mean, they know that they're the only people on the planet that give that planet any hope. And all those that give the planet seemingly no hope on all the other continents are breeding like rabbits, right? And if they stop breeding, that's it for the planet, right? It's gone. Oh, they know that. Yep.
It could be living on Easy Street and bringing in cheap labor from the neighborhood.
Yes, they could. Yeah. Okay. All right. What else do we have there? You know, again, you see this. Oh my goodness! And they are under the full control of their parents. I mean, the Revelators are just making a point of stressing it, kind of to shock us. Right, they're under full control of the parents. And then notice, they do not even allow single-parent families. Right, if one parent dies, right, there's a guardian that's brought in to help out. No single-parent families.
What about divorce?
Again, you know, they're going to...
You get divorced, you get stuck.
There are no kids that get, you know, that are, I mean, if you get divorced and you have the kids, then you've got a, you know, if you're a man, you're going to have, there's going to be a woman that's going to be helping out in that home. There has to be a male and a female, right, with those kids. Do you notice how, you know, how interesting that is? You know, that, you know, the demise of one or both. And you notice them reemphasizing a full orphan. Right? See, if one parent dies, it's a half orphan. And both parents dies, it's a full orphan. So they have that concept of a half orphan. Do we have that concept? See, do we appreciate how important it is to have both a male and a female influence? Like they do?
Dies. If it was divorce, would they say that they have fairly lax divorce laws?
Yeah, they have lax divorce laws, but
divorce, this wouldn't be the same.
But they don't have lax thoughts about children.
This wouldn't be the same case. This is only in the demise, right? I mean, you wouldn't think that they would.
Again, I mean, it's just...
You wouldn't be adopting, you'd have three parents then.
No.
You have a father and a mother who were divorced. And
No. You're not, I mean, they're not bringing in a, you know, they're just, I mean, that person that may, you know, like, let's say, you know, the man dies, the father dies. And so you have the woman with her kids. Right. I mean, you're not going to have a guy come in and live with her or remarry her or, no. I mean, but there, you know, there's at least going to be, you know, you can imagine, there's at least going to be a guy coming by occasionally and helping with the kids. You know, as a guardian. That's the point they're making, is that they don't just say, well, we'll just do a social experiment and see how the kids come out with just one parent. They're not doing that. They're bringing in, you know, a big brother or something. You know, you could think of it as, you know, we have the big brother program sort of thing, for instance, right? They're bringing in that idea.
You have to be well qualified.
Yeah, and then you see how seriously they take this, okay? First of all, it's a great honor to be awarded the guardianship of a full orphan, right? And it's a stiff competition with examinations. And
it is here, too.
Okay.
Boy,
yeah.
It's really impossible to get an orphan kid. Mm-hmm. Ask Paula. I mean, it's like, yeah. Most people have to go overseas to get them.
Right.
To get. And you have to really qualify. Yeah.
So... all those things, all those details are there that they, you know, they're taking this very, very seriously. And so, you know, you can look at some things that we are doing some, You can look at things that we're not. And it's not like, again, none of this is supposed to be, it's like, okay, we should just take these three paragraphs and adopt them by the letter, right? But there's a truth flowing through those paragraphs that they're trying to get us to reflect on and recognize. We need to implement some system that takes the home, the family, marriage seriously.
Because it's the foundation.
Yeah. And remember, as always in the Arantia book, I mean, when you use the word marriage, you're talking about a procreative relationship. Right? It's not saying that you might not have other kinds of civil unions, okay? But the word marriage in the Arantia book is just used to talk about a man and a woman coming together, because we're talking about the potential to have children, you know, through that procreative relationship.
So when you get married when you're older, it doesn't count.
Yeah, and let's say, like, you know, we've talked, you know, we'll talk about that a lot when we get to the marriage and family papers. I mean, that's one of the things to consider, you know, to define marriage to just be a procreating relationship. And if a man and a woman get together without the purpose is not to procreate and have a family, but just to share their life together, we should have a different name.
Well, what if they both have kids?
All right, okay. All right, see, I mean, obviously, I mean, yeah, again, there's complications. You can all, but just, you know, before you go into all the details, like what if, is just to try to get to the philosophic issue before you deal with the science of it. Right? And that's the whole point. There's always complications of the science of any issue. But if you don't start with a philosophic framework, right, then there's an arbitrariness to how you implement, you know, the science of it. Okay? That science is based upon what initial assumptions? Probably the old wineskin initial assumptions. Okay? And so, you know, you need that philosophic top-down perspective in order to get out of an old wineskin, like these people did. They were in an old wineskin, and they just blew the whole thing up. Right, and established a whole new philosophic framework for everything. Put everything in a new wineskin. You know, and like the revelators point out, the science of it is evolutionary. Right? It's evolving. It's like, you know, after 50 years they tweak the details and whatnot. Okay. Right? You let the details evolve, but there's a consistency. There's a philosophic framework that's staying the same, and the details are changing within that framework. That's what's not happening on this planet. Okay. Yeah, you got another thought there?
Well, I would say, to rephrase what you just said, I said that's not happening everywhere on this planet. But it is happening in certain places and certain communities. I don't think that we're a total lost cause. I think that we're definitely, there's a lot of progress.
Of course we're not a total lost cause, or this book wouldn't be in my lap.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
It's not either
happening or not happening. In other words, it's definitely in different stages in different parts of this world.
Right. I mean, I, exactly. I mean, I speak. It's not happening to a degree that a super universe level mobilization occurred.
Got a long ways to go.
Okay, I mean, so, you know, the degree to which you can point to positive things on the planet, don't be deluded by that. Okay?
You can be encouraged.
You can be encouraged, but be sobered, right? Those little points of light that you can point to exist on a planet that is in such darkness that the super universe mobilized. Okay? So, in other words, without help, those little points of light won't solve the problem. If those little points of life were quantitatively and qualitatively adequate, the book would not be in my lap. So, you know, avoid that tendency of, it's not like you don't, note them, you know, be encouraged by them, but don't think, oh, it's okay, I can stop, you know, worrying about it. Right, you don't come, right, the whole point is that it's, you know, it's the same reason Machiavelli and Melchizedek. It's not like when Machiavelli and Melchizedek came, you couldn't point to a single positive thing on the planet. There were all kinds of positive things on the planet 4,000 years ago. But there wasn't enough. And they weren't of high enough quality. Right? And so he came to try to make sure, you know, to blow on those faint embers to try to keep them burning until Michael would arrive. Yeah, because the Melchizedek's knew that if they didn't do that, they could do the math. All the embers would go dark before Michael arrived. Now, of course, you know, they did with the best they could, and they recognized, well, we failed. It's still going to go dark. It's not going to make it to Michael getting here. Even our best effort was not adequate. Well, the whole, through the individuality of the whole, stepped in, and there was a spiritual quickening in the 6th century B.C. Okay, that might still need to happen here, too. You know, no matter how effective this might be, it might fail. But maybe it doesn't go into an interregnum. Maybe there is a spiritual quickening event, or maybe the magisterial son comes and is very effective, or, you know, you could speculate a lot, but, you know, but it also might be the case that we have to go through an interregnum. Right? That may be, but nonetheless, you know, just the point is to not become complacent as an individual because you can see, well, that person over there is doing great things, so I can just rest on them. And again, we're reading this, we're figuring out what's missing, not so we can go out and change the world around us. That's not what the book is here to do. It's not a dispensational revelation. It's here to change enough individuals. All right? The task at hand is something you do yourself, not that you do to others. Right? You do to yourself, and then the positive things that you'll do to others comes naturally. Seek first the kingdom of heaven, and then just let that naturally flow out and benefit others.
It's universal truth. If you live, Chris, let me ask you a question, man.
Yep.
You know, we've got the paper here on neighboring planet, and it's obviously giving us some clues, or there's a lot of interesting things that give us an idea of what's going on on planets really close to us. And one would might guess that they might be suggesting some things we might want to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
But as you look at it and read it and read this, and you know, and then you reflect on it, and I'm sure you have, a lot of this seems, as we sit here today, something that would be very tricky or very, very difficult for us to be able to head towards, because we're so, in many cases, in other directions. And what I guess my curiosity is that do you see that, because you've mentioned this a lot about this not being here, it's not
a dispensational revelation.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. If you had to think about it, what do you think this planet will have to sort of, what direction do you think they'll have to start to take, will begin to take, and over a period of time that will put it more, you know, in sync with where it's supposed to be, so to speak? And this is maybe just a clue as an example, but we will obviously head in our own way. But
so barring, you know what I'm saying? Barring some dispensational sort of an event, you know, stepping in, right, the way this would work is, okay, my job is not to get a law passed that you know, it's against the law for two families to live under the same roof. That's not what they're trying to get us to do. But I can take the truth of that paragraph, and I can choose to form my family on a decent plot of land, right, bounded away from hubbub, right, to a degree, and I can foster my family being an island of truth in a sea of darkness. And just like Jesus tried to point out, I mean, truth isn't naturally attractive. If you begin to live a life of truth that stands in stark contrast to those living falsehood around you, right, that will get noticed. You know, and people will go, well, how did their family come out so successful? And they'll look at what you're doing. And it can spread from individual to individual, from family to family. And I mean, the point again is I mean, in order for there to be this integrous family, though, first, I have to be an integrous father, and I have to have an integrous wife who's going to be an integrous mother. You know, and the children will pick up, right, the loyalty to supreme values that we demonstrate, the relationship to truth that we exhibit. They won't just parrot what we say and what we do, you know, precept, not even example, right? Everyone knows the tadpole paragraph, right? That's the whole point, you know, is to trust in the power of truth to transform the world, right? Rather than we need a strong man to just change the arrangement of molecules by force, right? The dream of so many material idealists, you know, that there's going to be this benign, you know, absolute despot, right? That'll just force an arrangement of molecules and we'll be enlightened life.
I mean, that sounds very idealistic. Trust it. I don't know. I mean, the book also teaches to be practical, so I'm just wondering, that obviously takes quite a bit of time.
Yes, it does. Yeah, that's the thing. As we start to read what they're about to say about it, it's like, oh my gosh, the amount of time they're talking about to do what they're doing.
Seems like nothing to me.
Well, we haven't hardly gotten into it. But, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, that these people do on a daily basis. They've assumed a lot of responsibility. It takes a lot of time. You know, and, so, you know, so...
Time each day. I was thinking, time to be able to, as you just said a minute ago, they made this huge quantum leap, you might call it, into a different kind of...
Yeah, see, that's not going to happen here, right? Oh, right. See, I mean, unless it, you know, the only way that we could have this happen here like it happened there is if things got so bad, right, the residual core of, you know, relatively upstepped stock would probably have to do what they did there. I mean, one possible future scenario on this planet that you can play out is most of the planet becomes like the other continents on this planet. And the only solution is for the most integrous philosophic core of mankind to just sort of stake its claim in the north somewhere, right? And try to bound its, you know, they may have to build a giant wall, okay? But to just bound themselves away, since we, you know, we may not be able to do the island continent thing, you know, like they're doing there, you know, and try to just keep the hordes at you know, at bay, that might be a way, right? Some new country that's sort of a, you know, spreads over several countries now, you know, in the northern regions, you know, and let the climate, you know, keep some of the riffraff out, which climate just naturally does, you know, and then the rest of them you keep out by force, and you try to maintain until the magisterial sun comes or something, right? Or the planetary prince, you know, until Machiavelli steps forth and as definitively as a planetary prince and lays down the law on the planet. But, you know, you can reflect on that they might also be just in, aside from the details of this paper, saying, you know, that maybe that's one possible future for maintaining the civilization on your planet. Ism?
Do you think that there might be you know, groups of people and then communities and maybe even a state that could, you know, just move with these ideas in that direction and work within the current system to move that direction instead of putting up walls?
Yeah, I mean, see, obviously, you know, you put the wall thing, I mean, you know, it's the future I was projecting before, you know, if a few individuals start, you know, which develops into a few families, which develops into a few communities, you know, it might even grow, since we have multiple states just like they do, maybe eventually you could kind of have one state that, you know, amongst the United States, that starts to stand apart as an example. I mean, that's the whole point of the having different states. If one state really kind of figures out something, and all the other states are like, why are they so successful? And they examine what that state is doing. It's like, you know, that's a great idea. And other states follow, right? You can imagine it spreading, you know, and it could be an evolutionary process. There wouldn't have to be an interregnum. There wouldn't have to be some sort of kind of catastrophic bifurcation of mankind or something. That's certainly a possibility, though. But, you know, it could happen in a more organic, gradual way without some collapse or cleavage. But, you know, that's the way it would work. It would start with an end with, again, I mean, think about even with a dispensational revelation, how Jesus approached it. He was just a still small voice crying in the vast wilderness of the world. You know, one individual just walking about amongst, as a man among men, and people going, wow, the way he lives his life strikes me. I mean, you see, again, you know, the appropriate example that would parallel in Jesus' life, paralleling what we were just talking about, that evolutionary blossoming of truth, is what Jesus did around the Mediterranean. Not his public ministry. It's a different, you know, flavor thing. I mean, the lasting impact that his drop of truth in an ocean of darkness had with so many people, right, as he passed around the Mediterranean, you know, families or individuals, their entire rest of their life was, you know, irrevocably transformed. Right? We could do that, right? But you have to embody that, you know, a measure of truth like a third circular Jesus does. You know, and you're not going to embody the kind of truth that a third circular Jesus does if you don't start with the faith of Jesus. You can't just have a belief in some old dusty God cult, right? And you can't just rework some dusty God cult with the Urantia book, right? And believe in that new wine and old wineskins God cult. Right, you need to get out of an old wineskins of all the God cults. You've got to find the real God and a real faith, anchoring yourself to that real God, right? And then a sphere of truth can begin to form around that real faith. Right? Truth is impossible when all you have is belief.
We're going to talk about that in the Kingdom of Heaven paper.
Yeah. Right. It's just nothing can happen if you don't initiate the process with genuine religion. Right? And we'll see, we're about to get to that. Right? How are they doing what they're doing here? Right? We'll get to it here in just a minute. Okay. So we left off there in the third paragraph with, you know, this these competitive examinations for who can have the great honor of the guardianship of a full orphan. Okay, what else do they say?
These people regard the home as the basic institution of their civilization. It is expected that the most valuable part of a child's education and character training will be secured from his parents and at home, and fathers devote almost as much attention to child culture as do mothers.
the valuable part of a child's education and character training, okay, not temperament coddling, character training, right, will be secured from his parents and at home. Right, so, you know, we'll be reading about education, you know, their educational system a little bit, but it's all predicated on a very significant education in the home. Right? That the basic integrity of the child is not established at school, established at home. Because, of course, if a child doesn't have integrity, that bigger collective thing of a school is not going to work. You know, see our schools, right? Our schools are, you know, just hopeless now because of the minimal home quality that we have anymore. More and more of the students in schools are just not manageable and not educatable. Because they're just animals, right? With temperaments, no character.
I don't find that to be true, as I walk around this town, but maybe it's true in a lot of
places. It's true in so many places, right? I mean, there's a handful.
I understand the home thing is kind of. Yeah, in a challenge right now, and I agree with all that.
Go to any school in an inner city, right? A public school, in any inner city. Right? I mean, it's not that there aren't teachers that are trying, but it's becoming more and more difficult because of the poor homes that the children are coming from, and the complete lack of seriousness that we have about laying down the law like these people do. Yeah. You know, you can't just let the kids run wild. Okay, but anyway, again, you can't turn the school into some sort of, police state. they recognize that, right? They could have handled it by having police state schools, but no, it is expected, and boy, it's being tested, right? If those parents aren't handling those children properly, there's going to be problems, right? They're demanding, this quality of children coming out of these families. And also you notice they keep stressing, it's not like men are different on a neighboring planet. Men are the same on every planet. And fathers devote almost as much attention to child culture as do mothers. And it's not natural for fathers to do that, right? Because we don't have a paternal instinct. But you can see they're very much fostering the parental instinct and a loyalty to these high values that are recognized about the home. Men are expected to, take it up a notch. Okay, what else do they give us here?
All sex instruction is administered in the home by parents or by legal guardians. Moral instruction is offered by teachers during the rest periods in the school shops, but not so with religious training, which is deemed to be the exclusive privilege of parents, religion being looked upon as an integral part of home life. Purely religious instruction is given publicly only in the temples of philosophy. No such exclusively religious institutions as the Urantia churches having developed among this people. In their philosophy, religion is the striving to know God and to manifest love for one's fellows through service for them. But this is not typical of the religious status of the other nations on this planet. Religion is so entirely a family matter among these people that there are no public places devoted exclusively to religious assembly. Politically, church and state, as Urantians are wont to say, are entirely separate. But there is a strange overlapping of religion and philosophy.
Let me just pick up on that final statement, you know, and then into the details in the middle of the paragraph there. A strange overlapping of religion and philosophy. Strange from our perspective, right? Right? Because, see, as we so often talk about here, right, they, unlike any other people on their planet, have been uplifted enough that they can actually get a top-down point of view. Right? And they recognize that you have a sphere of philosophy, fundamentally, right? And there's a nucleus to that sphere, right? That is religion. Right? That true religion exists as the nucleus, at the center of the sphere of philosophy. Right? It doesn't, you know, exist somehow apart, like we think. Right? It's strange, you know, we're so unfamiliar with true religion that we find this strange, right? That they don't have churches. They have temples of philosophy. And in their philosophy, right, they know what that nucleus is, what that initiating spark is in the sphere of philosophy, right? To know God, to get up to the sixth level of meaning and actually know God. Not believe, you know, in the word in some God cult, but to know the real God. And to find love, genuine love. You know, that inner life fact. Right? And you can't manifest that directly. It only exists in the inner life. Right? But you can manifest it through service to your fellows. Right, so that it's loving service. It's not just material service for whatever reason the law demands it or something. Right? There's a motive behind that service. There's love behind that service, above that service. The thread flowing through that service, the red thread through that service. I see they know exactly what the fifth epical revelation is trying to teach us. Right, they know that.
You think they know sonship?
Yeah, I mean, they see again. It's very, very likely that they have a recognition of that from. Like I said, it's highly suspicious that they haven't forgotten everything from their first two epical revelations. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you see, that's another thing. See, about why these people might hold it. Maybe the Garden of Eden was on this island continent on their planet. See, another reason why it would have maintained the tradition there. I mean, who knows? Maybe the planetary headquarters was on their island continent. You know, I don't know. It all depends on what the geography is, and stuff. But however, those aside, you can just see without them going into any details. When they say they're striving to know God, you can tell it's not striving to memorize the details of some, human-constructed theology, right? Some God cult and all of its rituals. You can tell that they don't have any of that foolishness, right? God is not... they don't have some odd, some strange outer life thing that they call religion, like we do. Right? That's what we call religion. It's this odd, different thing that you do in the outer life that we call religion. It's not what you normally do. Right? They know it doesn't have anything all to do with the outer life. And that's why, see, again, it's, that you don't have these public... venues, or like that that statement about that, you know, not so with religious training, which is deemed to be the exclusive privilege of parents, right? Religion being looked upon as an integral part of home life, right? You minimize the outer life environment to just foster the recognition that it's fundamentally just an inner life fact. You know, you don't create this vast, complicated outer life thing in which it's very difficult for you to coalesce to the recognition that true religion is an inner life fact purely. So, you know, some interesting things to reflect on. There was some naturalness for them. It's much more philosophic people. We aren't as philosophic a people, no one on this planet. You know, everyone has churches and temples and synagogues and whatnot, you know, of religion apart from other things, you know, all the peoples on this planet. So we've got a challenge to, you know, it's a little more natural for them to do this. It's not so natural for us. So we, you know, religion is even more an unnatural thing on this world than on that island continent. It's sort of, this planet stresses the need to recognize that religion is fundamentally an unnatural state, not something that naturally rolls out like the outer life is natural. The inner life is not natural. It's unnatural. Yep.
I've been struggling with this because I recognize an institutional church which has always wanted to get involved in trying to solve social problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize that as destructive of the unity of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then I read something like this, and suddenly my mind is getting kind of confused and muddled up. It seems like something I was seeing clearly now suddenly is getting hazy.
Yeah, I was going to just stress. Okay, so you read this like, oh, maybe I should try to become an advocate for the dissolution of churches as an institution. It's like, no.
It's happening to us.
You got to. Yeah, they're dissolving, you know, a lot on their own. But the whole point is, you know, you don't try to somehow change the main evolutionary stream in this regard. It is what it is on this planet. But, you know, so that challenge I was saying on this world, it's for you. You know, it's all the more unnatural for you to pull yourself out of the limited consciousness of the main evolutionary stream about what genuine religion is. You're going to have to make all the more definitive effort as an individual to not just get caught up in the flow of religion is an outer life phenomenon. You know, and so it immediately is going to be about social issues and stuff. You know, if not political and economic issues, all those outer life things. You know, so to exert that effort, starting with you, you know, and then it spreads into your family. You know, now a lot of us are, you know, our children are growing up and gone and that sort of stuff. You know, okay. But nonetheless, you know, you can still think about establishing yourself as the kind of an individual that if you were 20, you know, and about to begin a family, right, you would manifest the way we're talking about here, you know, that your relationship to the cosmos would spread into a family that embodies the cosmos. And that family would resonate with another cosmic family. And soon you have a community of families.
Well, and let's face it, a lot of us here yeah. got into the arrangement, but when we did have children,
yeah.
and it made a big difference on how we raised our families and how we taught them and how they look at it a little bit differently because of that fact. So that's maybe the multiplying factor that it moves out. But you're so right. I mean, just that beginning part that we got over the first number of years made a big difference.
Sure.
I'm sure.
And all we're just hoping is, you know, those younger people coming up, you know, can improve upon our initial efforts, right? And families that are inspired by the revelation will become better and better with time. Yeah, but it'll probably be a long time before it's any sort of a big phenomenon, you know, quantitatively. But don't worry about the quantity. Worry about the quality, right? Desire improving quality. Be the founder of a new line of higher quality, right? We all know that civilization is dependent upon family lines with a relatively high quality. Right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why the book is here. It's gotten to the point where you really don't have enough family lines anymore with high quality. So there's no quality leaders anymore. Okay, what else do we have in there?
Downtown Denver.
Let's see. You do notice moral instruction is offered by teachers during the rest periods in the school shops. You don't totally understand the school shop things and stuff until we get to the education section, but they are. They are building upon what was started in the family. It's not like there's a dichotomy or something, right? But they did stress that it's founded in the home, and then you see the teachers building upon that foundation. We went through all this stuff about that. The religious is in the home. You can think about it, it's not typical the religious status of other nations on this planet. Most likely if they told us about the religious life on those other continents, it would be very familiar to us, right? There's going to be all just a wild menagerie of god cults, right, amongst all those other peoples, just like we have here. Some of them would have very little impact from the revelations that occurred on this world, and others would have little tidbits that they took off on weird tangents, and it would be very familiar, those other religions, all very outer life curiosities.
It seems to me that there are religious groups. On this planet that have more and less focus on knowing God.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So we don't want to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater either.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that get attached to that, yeah, that could fall away.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of, it's interesting to think about how some recognition has ebbed and flowed on this planet. I mean, like, for instance, just in contrast to the Catholic precursor, a lot of Protestant traditions, they tended to go way to the other end of the pendulum swing, but set up a very simple, austere, worship house. Nothing fancy, no fancy windows, no fancy molding, no fancy sculptures or whatnot. Even though they might not have recognized very clearly what they were doing, but see, they were trying to, it's like, it's not about the outer life. It's not about being awestruck by the cathedral, right? You're supposed to be going inside and finding God. We're giving you this little sanctuary to set, to get the hubbub a little bit bounded away from you so that you can try to find God in your inner life. See, so they had a recognition there, right, of that simplicity. But, they tend to go really extreme. It's like, and definitely it's going to be too distracting to have cushions on the pews. They need to be painfully, hard. And we've always had these tendencies to kind of swing the pendulum too far, and it becomes almost asceticism then, right? But, anyway, you had a thought there?
Temples of philosophy,
mm-hmm,
that's a fun thing to, mm-hmm, think about.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder what that would be
like. What would that be like? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have such things.
People understand more and more philosophy, and through philosophy, understanding things more deeply and improving their quality of thinking, and that could be applied to everything.
That temple of philosophy, you know, see, would be predicated on fostering the three cosmic intuitions. That would be the foundation of such a temple. For most of human history, all we've had is temples of so-called religion. You know, and in recent centuries, we've added temples of so-called science. See, we haven't gotten to anything that claims to be a temple of philosophy yet. Okay, what else do we have here? Notice it's interesting how they stress that no public places. You notice that in the one paragraph they double down on that. That's they're using this. The author is using this as to try to drive home religion is not an outer life thing, right? That's why he's repeating that. It's like, and you should know that. What did the masters say to you 2,000 years ago? You know, did he say, seek first a really strange, complicated outer life, you know, rigmarole? No, that's not what he said. Right, with lots of bells and candles and whatnot. And it's like, no. Right? Yeah, and again, you just, you know, this, you know, politically, church and state, right, are automatically separate. All that, you know, the bottom line of all that is, that's the paragraph that where you really recognize and you kind of go back and you rethink what you've read up to that. It's like, oh, these people are uplifted like we aren't, so they're just innately more philosophic, right? Genuine philosophy comes more naturally to them. And then everything is then within that much more fundamentally top-down perspective. They approach science more top-down and religion more top-down than anyone on this planet ever has. That's what really sets them apart. That's where you see that, you know, and that's exactly what the fifth epical revelation is trying to encourage each of us as an individual to do. Right, to get up to philosophy, get up to the upper domain, your personal living philosophy, that domain that's synchronized to the philosophy that is the cosmos. Right? And then approach science and religion anew from the top down. Right? Right now, everyone is just uploading a God cult. Right? You want to download God. Something that's not done. Everyone uploads some God cult. You want to turn it the other way around. Yeah.
Why do we want to do that?
Well, we could start with just, that's what the master told us to do. Seek first the kingdom of heaven. But see, what we want to do, right, it means we want to start with an objective reality. We want to start out of the old subjective wineskins of others and of ourself.
How is that going to benefit us? Why?
The way it'll immediately benefit is what you see when they talk about the psychic circles. Right? The more that you are, you know, you predicate everything you do on a genuine personal living philosophy, a sphere of synchronization with the cosmos, what you do in your material life will naturally be more effective, like they say in that psychic circle section, right? That you naturally have material success. You know, and that doesn't mean you have a bigger pile of money, right? It means you actually serve someone better. When you serve them, you're serving them materially. It's more effective. It's more lasting. It's more just basically helpful. You know how to, you know, exactly what the way Jesus served people as he went around the Mediterranean with Gannon and Gannon. Right? How effective he was there. Right? Is it because he was magical? No. Right? Because he started with the big picture. He started with the synchronization of the cosmos, a third circler. Right? And so it just naturally, when it flows out to some specific issue, some specific individual, some specific situation, it's so better attuned. It works better.
Like when you have the basics, the fact that you're a son of God and that you're a citizen of the universe, and it, your whole perspective, and everybody else is too, I mean, your perspective and how you deal with them just takes on a different format, a way of expressing itself. You just become a different person. And, you know, you got to start somewhere. You don't do it perfectly in the beginning, but as you begin to do that and take on a different philosophical look behind who you are, why you're here, what you're doing, it just upgrades the whole situation.
You'll be a better spouse. You'll be a better parent. You'll be a better worker. You'll be just everything gets better.
Less disappointment.
Yeah, there'll be much less disappointment, much less disillusionment. Right, because so many of us are so earnest and we try so hard, but we don't recognize we're trying to apply a falsehood. It's like I had so much will, I was so earnest. Why wasn't it effective? Why didn't it actually help?
But you know,
it does.
Yeah. And you just have to figure out. You have to be able to see how it helps. It doesn't always help in the way you expected it to.
Right, but okay, that's a great point. But see, what the revelation is trying to encourage is not just us doing something and letting the Supreme take everything that everyone does, you know, quote unquote good or bad, and take it towards good, right? I mean, yeah, the Supreme will do that. I can do something totally hopeless, selfish, ignorant, whatnot, and the Supreme will do something positive with it. But, you know, more and more, I want to join in well with this, right? So that it doesn't just take so long and is so convoluted as the Supreme works it out, right? If I can be more precise, if I can bring the Supreme's consciousness of the whole into my mind, I can strike step with that. I can be a catalyst.
Well, as they say, if your will is in harmony with God's will, no great things can and will happen. I mean, those kinds of things. Yeah. But that's something that we all strive for, but we all feel like we, at least me anyway, I'm not going to speak for you guys, you know, never really get there. It doesn't mean you'll keep striving.
Again, right, the whole point is not to achieve some measure of actualization of anything. The whole point is to try to be more and more potentially effective, right? Your value is a potential. Your meaning is a potential, not an actuality. The meaning of life is its adaptability, not its adaptation. The value of life, you know, is its progressibility, not its progress. Right? So all of us can have the requisite patience to do this if we just shift that. You don't try to measure how effective you are, you know, initially by how much you literally did help someone. Right? It's your job to establish the potential to help someone, and then let it flow naturally out. You'll be plugged into the system. Coincidentally, people will come into your life, right? And there are no coincidences in supremacy, right? Quote unquote, coincidentally, people will come into your life, right? Where your potential actualizes well. Just like coincidentally, various people happened to be at the same place at the same time as Jesus as he was going around the Mediterranean, right? That's not a coincidence that, you know, he ran into so-and-so, right? He's a potential, and supremacy works with that potential, and it gets actualized to the greater good. Right? But he did his job first, potentialized himself. Okay, all right, let's keep going here.
Until 20 years ago, the spiritual teachers, comparable to your rancher pastors, who visit each family periodically to examine the children to ascertain if they have been properly instructed by their parents or under governmental supervision. These spiritual advisors and examiners are now under the direction of the newly created foundation of spiritual progress. An institution supported by voluntary contributions. Possibly this institution may not further evolve until after the arrival of a paradise magisterial son.
All right, so you know, as they qualify it a little bit, they'll kind of pick up on that a little bit later in the paper about the why they said possibly this institution. But if things keep kind of going where they have this, first and foremost, a philosophic integrity, they probably won't go flying off on too aggressive of religious tangent. You know, where, you know, remember what they say about religion on this planet, religionists may not always act wisely, they may even act irreligiously, but they act, right? Okay, there's not so much of that on this island continent, right? It's much more tempered, right, and philosophically bounded. But nonetheless, as he very recently, they did get this little shift in putting together this foundation of spiritual progress instead of it being under the governmental supervision. But nonetheless, the thing again that's really startling is, you know, who in the heck does this person think he is coming here and tell me whether or not I've done a proper job in the religious education of my children? I mean, you know, see, that's how they keep coming back to those things that strike you. I mean, just how, you know, how much everyone has submitted themselves, submitted some of their sovereignty to this system, right, and allow themselves to be judged like this. It's very interesting level of kind of collective functioning. That a number of us have kind of a hard time with.
They also have a system, an entire system that you can,
right,
that you can intelligently submit yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it isn't. Yeah, we're suspicious with cause on this planet. We know how you know how limited these bureaucracies we have are, you know, and we don't want to submit ourselves to that benighted bureaucracy.
I find it really interesting that they've taken it out of the purview of the government.
Uh-huh.
And made it kind of, but it's given the people who have more zeal, because it's voluntary.
Yeah.
So those who have more zeal, it gives them a place to apply it.
Yeah.
But doesn't mandate that everybody else comply.
Right, you know, right.
There's a direction to it.
Yeah, you know, those people who are looking for a way to volunteer now have an avenue, right, that's appropriate and integrated into the system. It's not going to be some, you know, right-angle disruptive influence in the society. Yeah. Yeah, you had something too?
Well, it's like constructive criticism, which we don't like here on this planet.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yep, yep.
Well, maybe we don't, or maybe we don't in Boulder, but, I mean, there's a lot of places in the country where if the priest or the minister or whatever it is came to the house, you know, that's a big deal.
Yep.
They don't look at it as being criticized. They look at it as being an honor, or, you know, it's like a...
Yeah,
I know a lot of families that are like that, but different, not necessarily here.
And that's a great point, see? Notice that if you reflect on it, it's like, well... For most of our history, we did have sort of things like this, and everyone was okay with it. Yeah, see, remember, it's just, you know, the emergency is a very recent thing on this planet, right? It's only very recently that we've had enough spiritual energization that we've gone off on a tangent. You know, the evolutionary process, it may have been... You know, that religious authority that came to inspect the house may have had all kinds of silly notions in their head and stuff. You know, might be quite primitive, but it was there. It was accepted part of the society. It helped to stabilize those you know, former societies. Yeah, now, right, especially since the middle of the 20th century, right, it's becoming more and more difficult for us to accept that kind of rigorous structure, that form. That's stabilization. Everyone is going off on tangents, and it's tearing us apart. Yeah, so, see, some of these things they've been in human history for most of, until just recent times. All we have to do is just go back, pick up that thread of truth that was in the evolutionary process for millennia, and thread that truth through a better structure. Don't judge, don't dismiss the existence of a thread of truth because of the poor quality of the structure that was built around it 200 years ago. Take it. You can build a better structure, It's the old baby bathwater thing, All these things, we judge the value of the quality of them by the outer surface. We didn't penetrate to see that there was a thread of truth there. And so we threw the fact and the truth out instead of just reconstructing a better factual structure around the same thread of truth. Yep.
Plus, I think that we're lacking some humility for somebody to be able to tell us something where maybe they're not. They recognize that somebody knows more than they do, and they can.
Right. Exactly. I mean, see, of course, there's all these things. As soon as you get more spiritually energized, pride is more immediate. I mean, you think pride was a problem in the past centuries of mankind. Wait till you energize a spirit. Pride is a spiritual word. If you don't have some relationship to spirit, you can't be prideful. Animals can't be prideful. Right? So, again, to him who much is given is much expected, right? If we've been given a more immediate relationship to spirit, that means we have a much greater responsibility to direct that positively instead of just letting it roll naturally, which will not come out positively, right? Jesus, had to step in because, the disciples were getting sucked into pride, right? That's what happens naturally, right? When you awaken them to a little bit of spiritual consciousness, it's not, humility is good, but all good things taken to extreme become bad. He didn't have to give them a lecture on just how hopelessly statically humble they were becoming, to the point of it being a problem. No, that isn't what he had to give them a lecture on. It was pride, right? That's what will happen naturally. If you give someone a little bit of spiritual juicing. Was there something else somewhere? A question on the webinar?
Why would a religious leader come in from outside rather than one of the philosophic leaders to deal with this thing, which, of course, religion being the province of the home is kind of one half the fee.
Again, you're going to have, it's a philosophic society, but there are specialists, right, that focus on the initiating nucleus of that philosophic sphere, right? Those specialists are going out, they're the authorities that are checking about how well the family is initiating the philosophic life of their children.
That's the nucleus of the whole society.
All right, let's keep going.
Children remain legally subject to their parents until they are 15, when the first initiation into civic responsibility is held. Thereafter, every 5 years for 5 successive periods, similar public exercises are held for such age groups at which their obligations to parents are lessened, while new civic and social responsibilities to the state are assumed. Suffrage is conferred at 20. The right to marry without parental consent is not bestowed until 25. And children must leave home on reaching the age of 30.
Okay, a number of little fact points there. So it starts at 15, so you see this, humans long ago got this sense that, it's around that age that something kind of begins, because, of course, it's roughly at that point that you begin to separate mindily from your biologic parents, right? And so you you begin to take on some, apart from your parents, individual responsibility and action. Okay, so again, remember, it doesn't matter how long the year is in some, you know, generalized terms. You know, the life on a world is synchronized to that year. Be it, you know, in some more objective sense, long or short, 15 is 15, you know, 20 is 20. You know, notice right there, 15 plus 5 fives equals 40. Right. See? Getting to the age of wisdom, getting to 40. So they have this transition from when it starts, when you begin to separate mindily from your biologic parents, and until you finally reach the age of wisdom, and they have this evolution. You know, you see them recognizing 20, the age of choice.
Has nothing to do with the amount of laps around the sun.
Right? It doesn't. Well, it does. See, I mean, you know. However, quote unquote, long or short that lap around the sun is, 40 laps around their sun is in truth the same as 40 laps around our sun, even though in fact it's different length of time. But in truth, it's the same. So their 40 is in truth our 40, right? It's the age of wisdom. Yeah.
Are they a decimal planet like we are?
We don't know. And we talked about this, so we don't know a lot of those details. But all we know is, when all is said and done, at least this island continent is similar enough to us that they can talk about it like this in such detail. But you know, you can just reflect on the details of, you know. You know, they would go, no, 18 is too young to vote. They need to be 20. Just like when the transport seraphim arrived, you know, with Adam and Eve's children. Okay, if you'd reached 20, age of choice, okay, you had a choice. If you were younger, you had no choice. If you haven't reached the age of choice yet, right, you're taken off, right? 20 or older, okay, you could stay or you could go.
Yeah, we just reached 20. We were always 21 until just recently.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, even in my lifetime. Yeah. The argument behind that was, well, if you can go
die, if you can, right, yeah, we all know, right? But, yeah, just notice that, you know, they're that precision, we need to think about how fundamental that is. You know, they'll explain the marriage thing here in the next paragraph a little bit more, but, you know, you can't marry without parental consent until you're 25. So, you know, they're recognizing just if you're going to have integrous families, you know, especially if it isn't kind of a special situation that the parents recognize and will give sanction to, you need to get to 25 or you just don't have between the ears what it takes. Right, to do this well.
He's recognized this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If 28 is a man and 25 is a woman, you have to have a 2-year courtship, and
right.
Is mandatory.
Yeah. And of course, you know, remember what the Arantia book says about, you know, yellow man and the family. You know, how there's some natural integrity there, right? That a lot of peoples on the planet don't have.
Well, this is a mixture of yellow and what? These
guys? And blue.
Okay, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then of course the final one, right? No, I'm 40 and I'm still living in my mom's basement. Not happening there, right? Children must leave home on reaching the age of 30. Period. Yeah, well, that, you know, they would deal with that, you know. But again, see, just. Yeah, before you get into the, well, what if, you know, so, you know, you start with, you have a definitive core thing, and it's, you know, modified from there.
Come home for Thanksgiving.
All right, what else here?
I wanted to ask you
got something?
Going around the years, the five years of lapse, that it's more about not being the exact amount of time for different planets, but it is the going around. And I was trying to think, well, where's the thread of truth that's going to go back?
Well, no, I mean, it's just literally recognize that when the life carriers designed the life on this planet, they synchronized it with, you know, how long it takes for that planet to go around that sun, right? And I mean, it by design, right, there's a truth that flows through all inhabited worlds, right? It doesn't just, you know, it's designed into it. The truth is designed into it. They're designed so that their 40 years is in truth our 40 years. You know, it isn't somehow, it doesn't evolve.
Even
you know,
in fact, if it's
it doesn't evolve because it kind of like synchronized the life, sort of feels the rhythms of around the, you know, it's designed that way. It's just designed that way, right? So that, you know, they designed a single-celled plant on that world so that eventually it would evolve into a human, that when that human gets to age 40, it's like when we get to age 40, even though it's a longer length of time in terms of, you know, our years, right? Their year is longer than our year. Yeah. So it's just
imagine that planet out in the Kuiper
Belt. Right. Just think about, you know, again, it's just the incredible scientific minds of those life carriers that they can design this stuff in like that. Right? The life has to synchronize with truth. Right? The time of the life has to synchronize with the eternity of reality. It's just an amazing thing that they're doing. Okay.
Marriage and divorce laws are uniform throughout the nation. Marriage before 20, the age of civil enfranchisement, is not permitted. Permission to marry is only granted after 1 year's notice of intention, and after both bride and groom present certificates showing that they have been duly instructed in the parental schools regarding the responsibilities of married life.
Right, so they get definitive education specifically about this. Remember we had the parental course, the educational course, the industrial course. You know, in each of those, it's not just a judicial, right? All three of those areas have executive, legislative, judicial. You know, the whole parental thing is this full system. Okay? And so you're seeing that here. And so you can, no marriage under 20, period, and between 20 and 25, yeah, if the parents give permission. And if the parents won't, well, eventually you get to 25 and you can do it anyway. Okay.
If, right.
But you still, see, you might think, oh, I finally liberated myself from my parents that are holding me back. Well, you still have to conform to the system, right?
And if you have children anyway, then you don't get to have your children until you finish your certification.
Yeah,
submit your certificate.
Exactly. One can only speculate. It's like, well, what if, you know, they fool around and got pregnant? And, you know, you can imagine there's probably a lot of very serious consequences to, you know, on this planet, just, you know, going outside of the expected pattern. Yeah, we can only guess at what the consequences would be, but
some of these full orphans came from somewhere.
One more final statement here.
Divorce regulations are somewhat lax, but decrees of separation issued by the parental courts may not be had until 1 year after application. Therefore has been recorded. And the year on this planet is considerably longer than on Urantia. Notwithstanding their easy divorce laws, the present rate of divorces is only 1/10 that of the civilized races of Urantia.
All right, so, you can. They may be somewhat lax, but right, you have such a integrous structure they exist in. Right, when all is said and done, it's 1/10.
And this was written over 100 years.
And this was written a long time ago. Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. That divorce was not as common 100 years ago. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. 20 years ago here.
Yeah, just any way you look at it, it's like, well, what exactly does that mean? It's like, no matter how you approach it, it's like, well, the divorce rate is different in different countries on the planet, and it's varied with time. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's only 1/10, okay? In other words, it's a tiny fraction of anything that you can speculate about, right? Because there's all of this integrity that's expected of individuals, instilled into individuals from the moment they're born. And so when all is said and done, you have a much more stable system.
And that's the point.
And that's the point, yeah.
So let's have some fun and speculate a little bit about this year being a lot longer.
Uh-huh.
Considerably longer.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously if it's considerably longer, the planet and the sun, well, unless the sun is humongous, which it could be, I guess, if it were this close to our size, planet would have to be way out,
right,
which would mean that they'd be a whole lot different temperatures.
No, probably what that means, the fact that their year's a lot longer probably means the sun is a lot hotter, and so an inhabited planet has to be farther out, and so the year is longer.
So a hotter sun, a bigger sun, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's most likely what the deal is. Yeah. We're not talking, we're talking about a main sequence star, but... it's just probably a lot more fundamentally hotter. So the habitable zone is farther out from the sun, and so it just takes longer to go around.
Well, I guess they do have all kinds of beings, living.
Yeah. But again, you can tell, right? I mean, these are probably pretty similar to us. See, again, so it's probably just a simple thing like that. You got to be farther out because the sun is a little hotter, and imagine us being the beings, Forget about all the variations and what kind of mortals, and you'll see, you can even kind of maybe speculate. It's like, well, how much longer is it? We'll see in the next section here. What else? Do we have anything else there? Again, just both, the thing you see in common, both with marriage and divorce, there's that whole, making sure that, impulsive things are not allowed, right? You've got to reflect through this for a period of time. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is funny because the time this was written, the divorce rate in America was really low.
Yeah.
It was taboo to get divorced.
Right, like we were talking about. So 1/10 is right. Right.
Gosh.
Yeah. So it just shows you, what effect this, you can say the divorce regulations are somewhat lax, but... Right, when all is said and done, 1/10. Right. So it's just how much integrity is built into the system and the individuals. All right, so now we're going to get a little bit, the thing that you could do beyond what is said in that section is just try to think about, so in that whole sphere where there's the parental courts, right, you have a legislative and executive branches in that whole home life sphere. So, they obviously didn't go into any details there, but you could just start to think about all of the complexities that are involved in actually the precise system that makes all this stuff happen that we just talked about. How there's a legislature that produces these laws and stuff, and there's an executive branch that sees to the execution of those laws that we've just talked about.
Yep. Before leaving this topic of divorce, the regulations are somewhat lax.
Right.
The consequences of divorce must be even greater.
Right. So again, like I said, you can think about all the reasons why, despite the laxity, quote unquote, when all is said and done, it's only 1/10 of sort of what we would imagine.
Half of everything you have?
You know, we just don't know exactly how that is kept so rigorous, but...
My wife made it very clear. When you're in that business, she was to have a 50%. So that if I ever decided to part ways, it's going to cost me a dear.
You had some, Doug?
Plus, being more philosophical than we are, then you wouldn't have impulsive things and tangents and as much, I think.
Yeah, I mean, again, remember, you know, the goal on this planet is to have all regulations lax, because eventually no regulations are needed, nothing, no external laws are needed. All of the law is written in your heart, right? It all comes from self-control. It isn't imposed upon you from the by the external world. You know, you control yourself. You don't have to be controlled anymore.
We're a ways from that.
Yeah, we're a long ways away from that, obviously, yes. That's how far away we are from light and life. Right? You had something? No? Okay. All right, let's see if we can get a little bit on the educational system here.
Number four, the educational system. The educational system of this nation is compulsory and co-educational in the pre-college schools that the student attends from the ages of 5 to 18. These schools are vastly different from those of Urantia. There are no classrooms. Only one study is pursued at a time. And after the first 3 years, all pupils become assistant teachers, instructing those below them. Books are used only to secure information that will assist in solving the problems arising in the school shops and on the school farms. Much of the furniture used on the continent and the many mechanical
contrivances.
This is a great age of invention and mechanization are produced in these shops. Adjacent to each shop is a working library where the student may consult the necessary reference books. Agriculture and horticulture are also taught throughout the entire educational period on the extensive farms adjoining every local school.
Okay, so without reading through the rest of the section, you can tell already. Okay, so they're focused on practical stuff to begin with. I mean, obviously, not until you get to the point where you actually have the ability to think abstractly do they start getting into abstract education. It's all very hands-on practical stuff. But again, you see, K through 12, right? See, 5 through 18. Again, it's just, even though their five-year-old has been in existence, you know, a lot longer than our five-year-old, it's the same, right? Kindergarten through senior in high school, right? And so, so when you think about, it's all very, very relevant. When they don't give them suffrage until 20, right? That's just like what it means here. 2 years after you're out of high school. Right, to the point where you have enough abstract thinking ability, right, that you can really appreciate the philosophy of government enough that your vote should have some impact on the government. Right? Instead of just being, well, I'm a fancy animal with lots of emotions. Can I vote based on that? No. You can't vote based on that. Right? They're limiting that.
I think that's a wonderful way for our young people to be learning, to be applying everything they learn to something relevant that's right there in front of them, and they can see the benefit of knowing something or understanding something in context. I think that's just wonderful. What a wonderful way to learn.
Yeah, and you'll see that they build that. You know, I mean. And we can all appreciate how helpful that would be. All these details of, you know, they do one study at a time. Okay, so it's It's very serial instead of parallel. You know, you don't have seven different subjects, you know, bouncing around. Yeah, they stay very focused and build it up very methodically. Yep.
Are they well-rounded where they don't specialize and people learn?
You'll see as we get into this exactly what they're doing here, you know, that the specialization kind of comes later in many ways. Yeah. Let's see, there's, just like they point out, books are a minimal phenomenon to begin with, right? I mean, occasionally you need a reference text, in your practical shop class of, whatever sort it is. But I mean, basically it's hands-on, experiential learning.
Only carried down by memory then? Word of mouth?
No. It's just they have lots of books. They're just not, you're not sitting down at a desk in a classroom staring at a book, in first grade. Right? That's the whole point they're trying to make. And you see, they obviously know the truth of your entire educational journey up through the cosmos. You're teaching those coming up behind you. Not in first and second grade, but you get to third grade, and you're helping to teach the kindergartners and the first and second graders. We've often talked about that, the truth of the one room schoolhouse in the old days in this country. Right? You can tell they don't have one room schoolhouses anymore, but they've maintained that truth. And this is how practical this, much of the furniture and the mechanical contrivances, are all made, as part of this. You don't have, furniture factories. Yeah. Schools are making the furniture. The schools are making the doodads and the widgets. And all this bit of, you can tell there's all of this, agriculture stuff immediately associated with it. So grounded, hands-on. The first developmental epoch is the nutrition epoch. Have they forgotten that? No, right? Because if you forget that, that's the foundational thing, you'll lose that, right? And you'll find yourself back at the beginning of the nutrition epoch. So you see, they have a very philosophic structure. They understand the developmental epochs. Okay, now here they throw in this very relevant to the events of the last few days.
The feeble-minded are trained only in agriculture and animal husbandry and are committed for life to special custodial colonies where they are segregated by sex to prevent parenthood, which is denied all subnormals. These restrictive measures have been in operation for 75 years. The commitment decrees are handed down by the parental courts.
The question we always have, who would rule? They have parental courts, and the commitment decrees are handed on by those courts. And so this whole thing, that we are so confused about, that we see once again here in the recent events, if you listen to what everyone is saying, it's all, how can we prevent this from never happening again by taking away our freedoms? It's like, no, you don't take away our freedoms, you take away his freedom. Right? Try to find anyone on this planet who recognizes that fundamental truth, right? Whether they call themselves left or right or whatever, it's all, I have this idea of how we could, make all of our lives more complicated. Like, we could set up elaborate screening things, at all the doors of every school. Yes, it'll take 4 hours to get the kids into the school, but
you'll be safe.
Right. See, no, you don't restrict our freedoms. You restrict his freedom. He does not have a right as a feeble-minded individual to be free. Right? But if your fundamental philosophic predicate is all men are born equal, right, like we all think is the truth, well, then you think he has the right to be free. Okay? So
let's
see. Well, I'm not leaving it yet, but just, you know, I'm just trying to stress it here. You know, what do they do? Right? They don't execute him. Okay? They make him productive. Right? But it's only agriculture and animal husbandry, nothing else, because they know anything else is just silly. Right? You get him well grounded. Right? But he's apart, committed to for life in special custodial colonies, period. He's not free in society. He's apart. And you certainly don't let him procreate.
The animals might be a little nervous.
Right?
So, question.
Yep.
If that were, let's say, applicable to this particular planet, where... You know, I guess this depends on the degree of mental instability or whatever, but a lot of people may still have survival value, even though they were not free to some degree. And that's not something we have to...
That's why we're all wrapped around the axle. Exactly. The very fact that we go, oh my gosh, we're judging, you know his survival value, the quality of his... No, it's not a spiritual issue. It's our spiritual consciousness that leads us to believe that all men are born equal, to close our eyes to material and mental facts. It's like, yeah, we're spiritually equal, right? He's still a child of God, okay, but mentally and materially, there's issues.
In this life, it's not working out for
that. Yeah. All right. We got all, this really got totally confused in the 70s. And now, I mean, no matter how horrendous someone is, you can't institutionalize them. You can bring them in for observation for 72 hours, and then they have to be released again. It's like, well, this person is going to kill people. Well, we can't commit them. We have to release them. Okay, this is where we are. We are that devoid of material pragmatism, right? Our false spiritual idealism, our material idealism, and all men are born equal, right? It's just really creating a mess. So
survival value, I think I remember you saying that planet, they don't have thought adjusters, so how does that work?
No, they have thought adjusters. It's just not universally bestowed. They haven't had a bestowal sign yet.
Oh.
But, you know, especially the people on this island continent, I mean, these are very, high-minded individuals with strong, these people, most of these kids would be getting thought adjusters at roughly age 6 because their parents have thought adjusters, and it's been so for generations.
Okay. I did not understand.
Yeah. And, these are spiritual lineages, okay, in those other continents. Okay, there's probably a lot of mortals that don't have adjusters, but here, again, if there weren't really many adjusters here, again, this wouldn't be relevant to us. We share that in common, right? So that's why they can give us this. We all know how difficult this is. You know, they set it apart by big paragraph breaks here, this one paragraph. Right? This is a blind spot you have. Your lack of courage to recognize genetic facts. So, willfully blinding yourself to genetic facts. There are feeble-minded. That's not just some arbitrary way to oppress people by labeling them feeble-minded, okay? And you can't ignore that fact. So it's just, you know, when every time you hear when this happens and you hear everyone say, this is a really complicated issue. No, it's not. It's not a really complicated issue. It's a simple issue. There's nothing complicated about it. It's complicated if you think you got to try to figure out how you can restrict our freedoms to fix the problem. Yeah. That's why it appears to be complicated, because literally it's impossible to restrict our freedoms to solve the problem. Yeah, it's really complicated that way. Right. No, it's simple. You restrict his freedom. Simple. He's simple-minded. The solution is simple.
But here we don't have any... we don't have it set up to send...
Right, we don't have any of the structure, of course. You know, all we have is an abject fear of Victorian mental institutions. That's all we have, is that fear. Right? And we just get in a panic when we even think about institutionalized someone. We visualize this horrid, you know, London, Victorian, London, you know, mental institution.
Much less putting them on a farm.
You know.
Quite creative.
Yes. I mean, the person is going to have a wonderful life. They know they're being productive. They're part of society. They're respected. They're honored. They're given their own special place. They do great things. Okay.
Not slighted at all.
They're not allowed to go off on some tangent and kill children. Okay. Does that boy think his life is meaningful now? Yeah, it's just really, really sad. Anyway, so back to the main line of thought here.
Everyone takes 1 month's vacation each year. The pre-college schools are conducted for 9 months out of the year of 10. The vacation being spent with parents or friends in travel. This travel is a part of the adult education program and is continued throughout a lifetime. The funds for meeting such expenses being accumulated by the same methods as those employed in old age insurance.
Yeah, there's a whole section coming up on old age insurance. We'll get a little bit more on that later on. But you know, here you see, again, we've got this base 10, so they've broken their year up into 10 months. You know, I mean, you could kind of speculate. It's like, well, I don't know, let's see. If I... you know, you notice that they have a concept of months. Now, is that because they have a moon? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's you know, you notice it's 10, so you're kind of suspicious. Maybe it isn't a literal lunar month, but you know, how might this work? You know, they've got these weeks and these months. Let's see, if a week is 5 days, You know, we could, you know, you could speculate. Well, it's like maybe, could we have maybe a 50-day month, sort of? You know, and then you'd have a 500-day year? Or, I don't know, you know.
It may be that the size of their globe and how fast it spins around for a day.
Yeah, I mean, I see. You know, but you can kind of... You can play with it a little bit there, see. The main thing here is, you know, notice that vacations, productive vacations, are built into the system. You know, that, you know, remember how we read about, you know, getting to the point where our leisure time is productive? See, they've got that. It's part of the adult education program, fundamentally, you know, and then that's the kids are bound into that system, see, and they have a whole way of funding it and everything, so it isn't just, you know, huge expense and drain on families. Again, they don't want to suck the economic life out of families, you know, because of this. All right, what else do they say?
One quarter of the school time is devoted to play, competitive athletics. The pupils progressing in these contests from the local through the state and regional and on to the national trials of skill and prowess. Likewise, the oratorical and musical contests, as well as those in science and philosophy, occupy the attention of students from the lower social divisions on up to the contest for national honors.
So the whole, you know, regional hierarchy in all of these things, local to state to regional to national, and again, all very competitive. You can see, you know, how that's in every part of their thing. So again, you know, when we have this, oh, competition is evil and we should move away from a society with competition. We've talked about that before. You can see how, you know, they know that that's the only way to drive this, right? To achieve higher qualities, you need a competitive environment. We can't imagine that we're in some much more self-actualizing, light-in-life sort of state, like many today are getting ahead of themselves and thinking. Again, just you get the sense of how much responsibility, you know, and how full their days are, you know, with trying to meet the challenges that society expects of them. It's a quite vigorous culture that way. You know, in many ways, it's kind of exhausting to even think about just how much they have going on. And we haven't even gotten into some of the greater complexity yet. Okay, what else do we have here?
The school government is a replica of the national government with its three correlated branches, the teaching staff functioning as the third or advisory legislative division. The chief object of education on this continent is to make every pupil a self-supporting citizen.
All right, see, that's so the whole K through 12 thing is to achieve a self-supporting citizen. Okay, you can get into, you know, more abstract things after that. But if you aren't first a self-supporting citizen, the whole system is going to collapse. You know, if you're someone that has to be supported by the society, that, you know, you quickly run out of other people's money. You know, we know how that works. We've been trying it on this planet for a long time. It's like, it doesn't work. Everyone needs to be a self-supporting citizen first, and then we'll talk about fancy things second. And notice, you know, you wonder, it's like, well, with all these divisions of society, they have executive, legislative, judicial. Wow, even to the point where there's three houses in the legislative branch in education, you know, with that third house being the teaching staff. It's like, you know, this is like really their full three branch concept is implemented. You know, both in the, you know, relative to home and parenting, education, and industry. But they don't give us, you know, they don't give us a lot of details. It's like, well, exactly, you know, how do they populate the other two houses of the legislature? You know, they don't give you all those details. But nonetheless, you know, they need that wisdom advisory house in the legislative branch for education, and the teaching staff functions in that role. Is there a question somewhere? Or?
I just had a comment. How did you say that?
Self-actualizing?
Self-supporting.
Self-supporting.
I imagine that there's different levels of that, that some people have more capacity than others, and so that has to work in there as well. Yeah.
But again, just, you know, that, you know, you can put clothes on your back, food in your mouth, a roof over your head, right? That doesn't have to be done for you, right? You can be gainfully employed to handle the basic material necessities on your own, You don't have to be getting government aid for that. Yeah. No food stamps, right? That sort of stuff. All right, a final paragraph here.
Every child graduating from the pre-college school system at 18 is a skilled artisan. Then begins the study of books and the pursuit of special knowledge, either in the adult schools or in the colleges. When a brilliant student completes his work ahead of schedule, he is granted an award of time and means wherewith he may execute some pet project of his own devising. The entire educational system is designed to adequately train the individual.
Okay, so, yeah, okay, once you're out of high school, not only do you have the college option, but obviously, you know, more, you might say immediately, practically oriented adult schools, technical schools and whatnot. Right? But either way, you know, then you get into the book learning, okay, as it were. And notice it's not only that, you know, do they come out self-supporting, they come out a skilled artisan. Okay? You know, you can't just pound together hog troughs, right, when you graduate from high school. Right? You're a skilled artisan. Okay? So shop class is a little bit fancier than learning how to build hog troughs. Right?
You're learning as you go because you're building furniture and stuff. So
right. Right. All, you know, so, and they don't give us all the details, but obviously there's all kinds of different artisans, you know. So there is some growing specialization in that material craftsmanship. But the sort of intellectual specialization, no, that comes later on, where you'd end up being a paleontologist, you know, or whatever, right? Yeah.
Reminds me a little of the story of Jesus growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember, he used to get some time off because he was a decent student.
Yeah.
He used that period of time as well as, they were pretty skilled, at a little younger age, but still, it's sort of similar.
Yeah, that was just, you know, the one last little thing before we wrap up. You know, it's kind of, you're kind of struck. It's like, why did they give me that detail about, you know, brilliant students and, you know, executing a pet project of their own devising? You know, lest you start to think, wow, this is like this intensely regimented society, you know, and everyone is forced to, you know, one size fits all. So it's like, no, they have some complexity, and it has an adaptability for the diversity of students. Even though they're not talking about all that, they give you that little reminder there at the end. It isn't the point of this paper to give us all of the details, right? But just to give us enough that we can get the basic threads of truth that these people recognize and have found a way to implement, that we should also recognize and find our own way to implement. Okay. And sometimes the implementation is, you know, the basics are so straightforward, you know, you would just do it the same way they do it. You know, the challenge is to not kind of be overcome by the tension, like, well, how am I going to get our society to adopt that? That's not your first job, right? Your first job is to recognize this truth yourself and to begin to be a philosophic voice amongst your fellows, right? So that if you get into a conversation about education, you can bring in some perspectives. You don't go, well, let me run and get this book that I have, and let me read you this sentence, you know. No, you need to find the truth and be able to speak to the truth, right? And without the book as a crutch. Was there something else? Did you have something?
It was just a comment that, I don't know how to word it, but embracing that would be, the first step would be embracing that. I guess I'm stumbling all over. But, yeah, you have to you have to embrace that for everything else to fall away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're going to do just like Jesus tried to do, and he would teach others. You know, he wouldn't worry about all of the unfortunate, you know, little thoughts in their heads. He'd try to just get a hold of the thread of truth that they had and blow on it a little bit, encourage it to grow. And that individual will let go of the debris on their own. It'll happen naturally. You don't have to get in there and, you know, pull teeth, you know, pull the debris out of their mind. And you want to do the same thing with yourself. Work on getting the truth, being able to think in the truth and bring ideas down from that truth. And you'll discover, oh, I hadn't thought about it. You know, all those old silly things I haven't had, they all disappeared, didn't they? Right? It'll all just naturally dissolve away. Once you get to the truth of things and begin to build upon that new foundation. All right, well, we'll get into the third, you know, big division of their society, the industrial, you know, here next time. Same thing, all kinds of interesting little tidbits that they give you to think about, how we could first improve our individual consciousness about industry, and then maybe eventually that will impact society. All right, let's take a moment, everyone.